Chapter 1. Torah. In 597 BCE, the tiny state of Judah in the highlands of Canaan broke its vassalage treaty with Nebuchadnezzar, ruler of the powerful Babylonian Empire. It was a catastrophic mistake. 3 months later, the Babylonian army besieged Jerusalem, Judah's capital. The young king surrendered immediately and was deported to Babylonia, together with some 10,000 of the citizens who made the state viable, priests, military leaders, craftsmen, and metal workers. As they left Jerusalem, the exiles would have taken one last look at the temple built on Mount Zion by King Solomon, circa 970 to 930 BCE, the centre of their national and spiritual life, sadly aware that in all likelihood they would never see it again. Their fears were realized. In 586, after yet another rebellion in Judah, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem and burned Solomon's temple to the ground. The exiles were not ill-treated in Babylon. The king was comfortably housed with his entourage in the southern citadel, and the rest lived together in new settlements by the canals and were allowed to manage their domestic affairs. But they had lost their country, their political independence, and their religion. They belonged to the people of Israel and believed that their God, Yahweh, had promised that if they worshipped him exclusively, they would live in their land forever. The Jerusalem temple, where Yahweh had dwelt among his people, was essential to his cult. Yet here they were in an alien land, cast out of Yahweh's presence. This must be a divine punishment. Time and again, the Israelites had failed to keep their covenant agreement with Yahweh and had succumbed to the lure of other deities. Some of the exiles assumed that, as the leaders of Israel, it was up to them to rectify the situation. But how could they serve Yahweh without the temple that was their only means of making contact with their God? 5 years after his arrival in Babylon, standing beside the Kibar Canal, a young priest called Ezekiel had a terrifying vision. It was impossible to see anything clearly, because nothing in this stormy maelstrom of fire and tumultuous sound conformed to ordinary human categories. But Ezekiel knew that he was in the presence of the Kavod, the glory of Yahweh, which was usually enthroned in the inner sanctum of the temple. God had left Jerusalem, and riding on what seemed to be a massive war chariot, had come to live with the exiles in Babylon. A hand stretched towards Ezekiel, holding a scroll, which was inscribed with lamentations, wailing, and moanings. "Eat this scroll," a divine voice commanded him. "Feed and be satisfied by the scroll I am giving you." When he forced it down, accepting the pain and misery of his exile, Ezekiel found that it tasted sweet as honey. It was a prophetic moment. The exiles would continue to long for their lost temple, because in the Middle East at this period it was impossible to imagine religion without one. But the time would come when Israelites would make contact with their God in sacred writings rather than a shrine. Their holy book would not be easy to understand. Like Ezekiel's scroll, its message often seemed distressing and incoherent. Yet when they made the effort to absorb this confusing text, making it a part of their inmost being, they would feel that they had come into the presence of God, just as they had did when they had visited his shrine in Jerusalem. But it would be many years before Yahwism became a religion of the book. The exiles had brought a number of scrolls from the royal archive in Jerusalem with them to Babylon, and there they studied and edited these documents. If they were allowed to return home, these records of the history and cult of their people could play an important role in the restoration of national life. But the scribes